The ruby red pilot light of the Fender Twin Reverb is glowing in the dark. It's time for this edition of Before the Sound Check, the program that offers you a look into the lives and careers of the people who make music happen. We talk up close and intimately with the artists, musicians, producers, engineers, the music teachers, the bus drivers, the production crews, the agents, and the managers. Everyone involved in making the music you love and who bring it to you. And now your host, Tony Sarno.
Thank you, Ronnie, and welcome everybody to the show. I also want to thank our sponsor, Subsurface Technologies, whose Aquafreed well rehabilitation system restores lost water production using environmentally sound carbon dioxide, producing no waste. Once water production is restored, AquaGuard maintains the well pumping rate and water level, thereby reducing energy costs and putting the system on a sustainable, low-cost path to the future. Subsurface Technologies was green before green was popular. Call them at 800-283-3353 or visit stiwater.com. Clayton Ivey started playing piano at age 6, and he has never stopped. As a session musician, you've heard him on songs like Respect Yourself by the Staple Singers, Patches by Clarence Carter, I'm Your Puppet by James and Bobby Purify, One Bad Apple by the Osmonds, Best of My Love by the Emotions, Touch Me in the Morning by Diana Ross, and Hey Joe by Wilson Pickett. You've also heard him on recordings by Greg Allman, Aretha Franklin, Bob Seger, Bette Midler, Boz Scaggs, Chet Atkins, Roy Orbison, Lionel Richie, Etta James, Toby Keith, Brooks and Dunn, Bobby Gentry, The Commodores, Quincy Jones, B.J. Thomas, B.B. King, Glenn Frey, Hank Williams Jr., Little Richard, The Righteous Brothers, Rod Stewart, and so many more. Clayton was a staff producer for Motown Records and produced the million-selling hit record Angel in Your Arms by the group Hot, which he also co-wrote. He was inducted into the Musicians Hall of Fame as part of the legendary Muscle Shoals rhythm section known as the Swampers. Hey, Clayton, how you doing?
I'm doing fine, Tony. How you doing, man?
I'm doing great. What does a session musician do?
Well, I'll tell you what he does. The first thing he better do is when he gets to the door to the studio, he better leave his ego outside.
I got that. So for the folks, there's a pretty big difference between touring musicians and session guys, right, Clayton?
Oh, absolutely. Night and day. Night and day. Well, see, with a session player, you have to be able to play the same lick 50 times. You have to play the same lick every time. It's the same place with the same intensity and the same articulation. And you have to do that, be able to do that.
But
and that's hard to do.
But you also have to come up with the part, right?
Oh, well, absolutely. You got to do that. I mean, unless it's written for you. And in the way we cut records of Muscle Shoals in Nashville, that's not the case. We have to come up with it on the spot. Now, in L.A., they'll write it out for you. You have to play it out there. Most of the time. Not all the time. Not all the time.
Aren't the best records where the session guys come up with the licks and they give... for instance, when I think about that Neil Diamond song, Sweet Caroline.
Sweet Caroline, yeah.
Didn't the guitar player come up with that? Ding, ding, ding.
Oh, yeah, Reggie Young.
Was that? Oh, yeah. Oh, man.
That was Reggie. They cut that in Memphis at American, and Chips Moman produced.
And he also played on that great lick on a Dobie Gray song.
Dobie Gray, Drift Away.
Drift yeah. Away, that was him.
Reggie was one of those unique guys, man. If you need a lick on a record, Reggie could play it.
But that's you also, Clayton. I know you played on that song, If Loving You Is Wrong, I Don't Want to Be Right.
I did.
And I believe, of course, we were neighbors in Bellevue, but before I knew
That's
you,
true.
Before I knew you, I used to hear that song, and I love that Hammond organ lick that you played in there.
Well, I appreciate that, man.
and matter of fact, I had you play that on a record that I produced years ago, and I said, well, Clayton,
you sure did.
Do that same thing. Is that Luther Ingram?
Yeah, and I'll tell you something about that record.
Okay.
Here's what happened with that. We had cut this whole album on Luther, right? And Johnny Baylor, who was president of Coco Records, flew down from Chicago and listened to everything, right? Listened to the whole album. This is the president listening to the album. And If Loving You Is Wrong, I Don't Want to Be Right is the only song he did not recut. We recut the whole album, and that's the only one he kept that we didn't recut.
What did he had a problem with the other ones?
Well, he just didn't hear it. But he heard, if Loving You Is Wrong, he heard that one.
And that was the only one that was a hit, right?
That was the only one that hit off that album, yeah.
Yeah, let's play a little bit of that. If loving you is wrong, I don't want to be right. So anyway, why don't you basically go through the sequence of what exactly happens. As you say, you leave your ego at the door, but when you get in the studio...
Well, what you do then is they're going to play you a demo, right? Now, sometimes you can play what's on the demo, because most of the time some of the demos are pretty good. You know what I'm saying?
Right, yeah.
But you can take a lick and elaborate on it, or you can just create something yourself. You know what I'm saying?
Yep.
It's whatever the producer likes. Rick liked for you to try both ways, Rick Hall.
And that was in Muscle Shoals.
That's in Muscle Shoals, yeah. We cut all those old R&B records down there. And then we cut the Osmonds, of all people. 71, we cut One Bad Apple. He was producer of the year.
Who, Rick Hall?
Yeah, Rick was, yeah. That record sold 11 million singles.
And he was the owner of Fame Studios, is that right?
Yeah, he owned it. Built it and everything. He was a guy.
People thought it was almost sounding like the Jackson 5. Isn't that what they were going for?
Well, the thing is, Jackson 5 were the Jackson 5. Let's face it. You couldn't beat the Jackson 5, but I thought there was plenty of room for other guys or groups to come along and try to emulate. They didn't try to emulate them. They sounded totally different.
Well, but don't you think if they really wanted to emulate them, they would have gone to Motown because they would use the same musicians, right?
That's exactly right. They brought them down there. And because, you know, they used to be on Andy Williams' show in Hollywood. And they came down with Mike Curb when he was president of MGM at 26 years old. But they came to Muscle Shoals, man, and we cut this One Bad Apple that George Jackson wrote, who also wrote Old Town Rock and Roll.
That Bob Seger song?
Yeah. Bob Seger's record is the demo.
You didn't play on that, did you?
No, that was Randy McCormick.
The same guy wrote One Bad Apple?
Well, yeah, that's what's really weird. Same guy wrote One Bad Apple, wrote Old Time Rock and Roll, Slip Away, and Too Weak to Fight on Clarence Carter. He wrote so many different kinds of songs. It was amazing.
You played on Patches, didn't you, by Clarence Carter?
I played on Patches, and in about a year and a half period, we did Patches, Fancy by Bobby Gentry, and One Bad Apple on the Osmonds. Three different kinds of records. It's amazing.
When I've worked with you, Clayton, you usually start on Wurlitzer piano. Is that right?
Yeah. Well, I like to.
Now, tell me what you did on Patches.
I played the lick of the intro on Patches. Da 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 thing.
And you came up with that?
Yeah. That particular version of it, yeah.
And that was a number one record, wasn't it?
Oh, it was a big number one record, yes.
Is there anything else you can tell me about it?
As a matter of fact, I can. That rhythm section, the drummer and the bass player on Patches and the drummer and the bass player on One Bad Apple and the drummer and the bass player on Fancy were all different players, except for me and the two guitar players, Junior Lowe and Travis Wallman.
And
the drummer and the bass player on those three records were all different players.
You remember those guys? Who were they?
Oh, yeah, I remember. Well, on Patches, it was Jerry Masters played bass, and the drummer was from Memphis, and all I can remember was Moondog. That's the only name I can remember. they called him Moondog. I swear. And on Fancy, it was Freeman Brown and Jesse Boyce. And on One Bad Apple, it was Fred Prouty and Bob Ray.
And what... What studio was that cut? All cut in Fame?
All three of them cut in Fame.
And same producer?
Same producer.
Well, let's play a little bit of Patches.
I was born and raised down in Alabama on a farm way back up in the woods. I was so ragged that folks used to call me Patches. Papa used to tease me about it, cause deep down inside he was hurt cause he'd done all he could. My papa was a great old man. I can see him with a shovel in his hand. See, education he never had. He did wonders when the times got bad. The little money from the crops he raised barely paid the bills we made. Old life had kicked him down to the ground. When he tried to get up, life would kick him back down. One day, Papa called me to his dying bed, put his hands on my shoulders, and in tears he said, Patches, I'm depending on your son. Later, Papa passed away, and I became a man that day. So I told Mama I was gonna quit school, but she said that was Daddy's strictest rule. So every morning before I went to school, I fed the chickens and I chopped wood too. Sometimes I felt that I couldn't go on. I wanted to leave, just run away from home. But I would remember what my daddy said, with tears in his eyes on his dying bed. He said, Patches, depending on your son, I've tried to do my best. It's up to you to do the rest. Then one day a strong rain came and washed all the crops away. And at the age of 13, I thought I was carrying the weight of the whole world on my shoulders. And you know, Mama knew what I was going through, cause every day I had to work the fields, cause that's the only way we got our meals. See, I was the oldest of the family, and everybody else depended on me. Every night I heard my mama pray, Lord, give him strength to make another day. Though years have passed and all the kids are grown, the angels took Mama to a brand new home. Lord knows, people, I shed in tears, but my daddy's voice kept me.
Back in the 70s, you'd hear a song like Patches, which was, I would consider, R&B, and then the next minute you'd hear Led Zeppelin.
That's right.
And I mean, and that was the beauty of radio back then, because it was good music. Well, it was just good music.
If it was good, it got played.
So continue about as a session guy. So you walk in, leave your ego at the door, you get your sound, and then, of course, everybody's kind of a little tense, obviously, because studio time, it, give or take, is about $100 an hour, and then the engineers a certain rate and stuff. And so you're going through quite a bit of money every hour that goes by, and so you need to get that thing cut.
I'll tell you what, I mean, of course, it's all relative, I guess, but it costs a lot of money to cut a recording session today. Leader on the session is $842 every 3 hours. Sidemen get half that. But I tell you what's funny. On I'm Your Puppet, James and Bobby Purify, we cut 23 hours straight.
Same song?
Yeah, same song now. Remember I told you about a minute ago that you had to play the same lick every time?
Yeah.
Well, after 23 hours, they kept the third cut.
Now, what was the producer looking for, Clayton?
Well, I don't have a clue. Because I'm going to be honest with you. After three or four cuts, you've lost. You done went past it.
Right. Now, the Beatles...
After the band runs it down, you get your lick. If you do over two or three cuts, you've lost it.
So, how many takes you think you would have taken during that 23 hours?
Oh, 30 or 40.
The Beatles would take 30 or 40 takes, and then sometimes what George Martin would do would splice a chorus in and another part because he'd want to take the best parts. Is that right?
Right, exactly. I mean, you know, some guys did it that way. And people like Quincy Jones would take two or three cuts, and that's it.
The one that I know, when I hear it, I go, I know that's Clayton, and that's the Staple Singers.
Da-da-da, that thing. Respect Yourself.
Well, let's play a little bit of that, Respect Yourself by the Staple Singers. So, Clayton, now you've been producer, writer, publisher, but your main thing has been a session musician. Is there a reason that you went that way?
Well, the reason is because I tried all the elements. I enjoyed doing them, don't get me wrong. It's just that it wasn't my first love. Sessions was my first love. That's why I moved to Muscle Shoals, was to play sessions. And that's what I enjoy doing, you know, because I can work for 3 hours and I'm done. If, when you are a studio owner or a producer, you're not done after 3 hours.
You're never done. You know?
Right? You're never done. And then you gotta puddle with all that other stuff that goes along with it. And I just got tired of it.
So
then I said, I'm gonna go back and just be a session player. That's what I want to do. That's what I do best anyway.
And I know, because we've worked a little bit. I produced a few things that you played on, and I know that mm-hmm. It's a very, very specific talent. And do you have any, say, advice for a young player that wants to get into it? Because I know I've done a little bit of that. I've dabbled in sessions, but I haven't focused on that.
I tell you what I think is probably the most important thing. If you're just starting out learning how, and you want to be that, because you got to want to be it before you can be it. You know what I'm saying?
Right.
You got to really want this. It's like being a fighter pilot, I guess.
Yep.
And what you got to do is you got to learn to have discipline.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you can't walk in there. Let's just say you're a good player, a really good player.
Yep.
And all this cocky stuff. Just like I was telling you a minute ago, you better leave that stuff outside the door, because if you work with producers like I work with, Jerry Wexler's, Quincy Jones, Rick Hall, and all these people, they don't want to hear none of that. They'll fire you on the spot. Now, that's no lie.
Oh, I know. Because I know I've suggested a few players to you, and you say, well, no, we got to get this guy.
But you got to have that discipline, man.
You got to
know when to play, and you got to know when not to play.
You've seen what I do, basically. I'm a band leader. I mean, that's what I consider myself. And I play,
right?
And I play well, and I've been playing for many, many years, but I haven't focused on any one specific thing. I like to write. I like to sing. I like to play. And so are you saying that to be a session guy, you kind of have to just specialize in that?
Yeah. I mean, because every great session player, that's what he did.
Right.
He specialized in doing that. You got to understand, you got 4, 5, 6 musicians. They go in this room, right?
Yep.
They sit down. They look at a chart. They've never seen this chart, people. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
They've never heard this song. They've never seen this chart. But yet they can cut that in 2 or 3 takes, and they'll have it. Everybody can't do that.
And at that point, it's etched in stone.
That's it. At the second or third cut, that's the record.
Yeah,
and everybody can't do that.
No, you know what I'm saying? I know.
Some great musicians that could get on stage and burn the house down.
Right.
But when that red light comes on, I don't know what happens. I don't know what happens. I don't know what happens to them. But when you go hear them live, you say, "My God!"
Yeah.
How can I get that on tape?
For the people that don't know what the red light is, that's in the studio when you record. All of a sudden, that light comes on, and
oh, things change real quick.
Right. Well, but
some guys can do it, but majority can't.
And
but those guys, whoever they may be, so old guys like me and all of us session players that's in the Musicians Hall of Fame. They all had that same thing. They wanted to, that's what they wanted to do more than anything.
Yeah, yeah.
Was be a session player. And the great ones, what I consider the great ones, ended up doing just what they wanted to do.
So someone like Glenn Campbell obviously became a big pop star, but I mean, he started out as a session guy, right?
He was a session player. He was a session player for years. He played with the Wrecking Crew.
Yeah.
And all that stuff. I mean, but all those guys, that's what they, I mean, you gotta really want it. If you're a young guy, you gotta know that's what you want to do.
And
because you can spend a lot of years trying to learn how to do this, and all of a sudden you're 40 years old.
Right.
You know, and you still don't have it.
Well, that's right. I mean, it's very, very few. I know in Nashville, I did a proper session when I first came here because I used to play with David Clayton Thomas in New York City, and the road manager hired me to play on this gal's record, Carrie Folks. I think she was, I don't know, Miss Tennessee or something like that. And that's where I met Craig Kraft, and I met Mike Joyce and a lot of these session guys back then. And Mike Sievers was on that gig. But I mean, that was my really only proper. I've done a few sessions, but I probably could have spent the last 20 years, 25 years chasing it. And so, what kind of talent do you have to make that your discipline? Or do you think that somebody can actually learn it?
I personally, as a part of you, is a session player. You know what I'm saying?
Right.
You just have to refine it.
Well, I know it's always a pleasure to hear you play, Clayton. I love your B3 playing. I love your piano playing. I love your Wurlitzer playing.
Well, I appreciate that, Tony.
Yeah.
And you and I are going to do a record together, too.
I'm going to come down there. I can't wait to record a Muscle Shoals. The reason I ended up down here to begin with is I said, well, like I said earlier, it's something in the water down here. So I'd moved to Atlanta, and I've been down this way because my favorite music is down here. And so it's going to be a treat to come down to Muscle Shoals.
Well, that's where all my favorite music is.
It's absolutely.
And it's just a great place to live. We moved back here last April, been here a year out here on Shoals Creek. And it's wonderful out here.
That's great. Well, Clayton, thanks so much. It's always good to talk to you. And
good talk to you, man. And give me a call when we get ready. We'll do it.
All right. We'll talk to you soon, man.
You take care, man.
Okay.
Bye-bye.
Bye. Well, if there's one thing about those three songs that we played, they all have a common thread, and that's Clayton Ivey. Wow, what a great talent. We have enough of an interview for another show, so we're going to be able to play Hey Joe, that one he cut with Wilson Pickett, and that's got Dwayne Allman playing guitar on it. And Clayton says that that's where the Allman Brothers sound came from. And then the song that he wrote and produced called Angel in Your Arms, we'll play that one. And then One Bad Apple, that one that the Osmond Brothers recorded and became a big, big hit. And again, that common thread is Clayton Ivey. A lot of it's Wurlitzer, but some B3. So I appreciate you listening. Thanks a lot. I'm Tony Sarno. I'd like to thank Ronnie Lake and Chris Lucky from Hippie Radio 94.5 in Nashville. I also want to thank our sponsor, Subsurface Technologies, whose aquafree well rehabilitation system restores lost water production using environmentally sound carbon dioxide, producing no waste. Once water production is restored, AquaGuard maintains the well pumping rate and water level, thereby reducing energy costs and putting the system on a sustainable, low-cost path to the future. Subsurface Technologies was green before green was popular. Call them at 800-283-3353 or visit stiwater.com. You can reach me on Facebook and Instagram at Tony Sarno Music, and on my website, tonysarno.com. See you next time on Before the Soundcheck.